Mowgli's Brothers. Now Ren the kite brings home the night that man the bat sets free. The herds are shut in byre and hut, for loose till dawn are we. This is the hour of pride and power, talon and tush and claw. Oh, hear the call, good hunting all, that keep the jungle law. Night Song in the Jungle. It was 7 o'clock of a very warm evening in the Siwanee Hills, when Father Wolf woke up from his day's rest, scratched himself, yawned, and spread out his paws one after the other to get rid of the sleepy feeling in their tips. Mother Wolf lay with her big gray nose dropped across her 4 tumbling, squealing cubs, and the moon shone into the mouth of the cave where they all lived.
"Arr," said Father Wolf, "it is time to hunt again." He was going to spring downhill when a little shadow with a bushy tail crossed the threshold and winked. "Good luck go with you, O chief of the wolves, and good luck and strong white teeth go white noble children, that they may never forget the hungry in this world." It was the jackal, Tabaki, the dish licker. And the wolves of India despise Tabaki because he runs about making mischief and telling tales and eating rags and pieces of leather from the village rubbish heaps. But they are afraid of him too, because Tabaki, more than anyone else in the jungle, is apt to go mad, and then he forgets that he was ever afraid of anyone, and runs through the forest biting everything in his way. Even the tiger runs and hides when little Tabaki goes mad, for madness is the most disgraceful thing that can overtake a wild creature. We call it hydrophobia, but they call it diwani, the madness, and run. "Enter then, and look," said Father Wolf stiffly. "But there is no food here." "For a wolf, no," said Tabaki, "but for so mean a person as myself, a dry bone is a good feast." "Who are we? The Gidalog, the jackal people, to pick and choose?" He cuddled to the back of the cave, where he found the bone of a buck with some meat on it, and sat cracking the end merrily. "All thanks for this good meal," he said, licking his lips. "How beautiful are the noble children! How large are their eyes! And so young, too! Indeed, indeed, I might have remembered that the children of kings are men from the beginning." Now, Tabaki knew as well as anyone else that there is nothing so unlucky as to compliment children to their faces. It pleased him to see Mother and Father Wolf look uncomfortable. Tabaki sat still, rejoicing in the mischief that he had made, and then he said spitefully, "Sheik Khan, the big one, has shifted his hunting grounds. He will hunt among these hills for the next moon, so he has told me."
"Shall I tell him of your gratitude?" said Tabaki.
"Out," snapped Father Wolf, "out and hunt with thy master. Thou hast done harm enough for one night."
"I go," said Tabaki quietly.
"Ye can hear Sheik Khan below in the thickets. I might have saved myself the message."
Father Wolf listened, and below in the valley that ran down to a little river, he heard the dry, angry, snarly, sing-song whine of a tiger who has cut nothing and doesn't care if all the jungle knows it.
"The fool," said Father Wolf, "to begin a night's walk with that noise? Does he think that our buck are like his fat Wangunga bullocks?"
"Hush, it's neither bullocks nor buck he hunts tonight," said Mother Wolf. "It is man."
The whine had changed to a sort of humming purr that seemed to come from every quarter of the compass. It was the noise that bewilders woodcutters and gypsies sleeping in the open and makes them run sometimes into the very mouth of the tiger.
"Man," said Father Wolf, showing at his white teeth. "Fah! Are there not enough beetles and frogs in the tanks that he must eat men? And on our ground, too. The law of the jungle, which never orders anything without a reason, forbids every beast to eat men, except when he is killing to show his children how to kill. And then he must hunt outside the hunting grounds of his pack or tribe. The real reason for this is that man-killing means, sooner or later, the arrival of white men on elephants with guns and hundreds of brown men with gongs and rockets and torches. Then everybody in the jungle suffers. The reason the beasts give among themselves is that man is the weakest and most defenseless of all living things, and it is unsportsmanlike to touch him. They say too, and it is true, that man-eaters become mangy and lose their teeth. The purr grew louder and ended in the full-throated "arr" of the tiger's charge. Then there was a howl, an untigerish howl, from Shere Khan. "He has missed," said Mother Wolf. "What is it?" Father Wolf ran out a few paces and heard Shere Khan muttering and mumbling savagely as he tumbled about in the scrub. "The fool has had no more sense than to jump at a woodcutter's campfire and has burned his feet," said Mother Wolf with a grunt. "Tabaki is with him." "Something is coming uphill," said Mother Wolf, twitching one ear. "Get ready." The bushes rustled a little in the thicket, and Father Wolf dropped with his haunches under him, ready for his leap. Then, if you had been watching, you would have seen the most wonderful thing in the world. The wolf checked in mid-spring. He made his bound before he saw what it was he was jumping at. And then he tried to stop himself. The result was that he shot up straight into the air for 4 or 5 feet, landing almost where he left ground. "Man," he snapped, "a man's cap, look!" Directly in front of him, holding on by a low branch, stood a naked brown baby who could just walk, as soft and as dimpled a little atom as ever came to a wolf's cave at night. He looked up into Father Wolf's face and laughed. "Is that a man's cub?" said Mother Wolf. "I have never seen one. Bring it here." A wolf, accustomed to moving his own cubs, can, if necessary, mouth a neck without breaking it. And though Father Wolf's jaws closed right on the child's back, not a tooth even scratched the skin as he laid it down among the cubs. "How little, how naked, and how bold," said Mother Wolf softly. The baby was pushing his way between the cubs to get close to the warm hide. "Ahai, he is taking his meal with the others, and so this is a man's cub." Now was there ever a wolf that could boast of a man's cub among her children? "I have heard now and again of such a thing, but never in our pack or in my time," said Father Wolf. "He is altogether without hair, and I could kill him with a touch of my foot. But see, he looks up and is not afraid." The moonlight was blocked out of the mouth of the cave, for Shere Khan's great square head and shoulders were thrust into the entrance. Tabaki, behind him, was squeaking, my lord, it went in here!" "Shere Khan does us great honor," said Father Wolf, but his eyes were very angry. "What does Shere Khan need?" "My query. A man's cub went this way," said Shere Khan. "Its parents have run off. Give it to me." Shere Khan had jumped at a woodcutter campfire, as Father Wolf had said, and was furious from the pain of his burned feet. But Father Wolf knew that the mouth of the cave was too narrow for a tiger to come in by. Even where he was, Shere Khan's shoulders and forepaws were cramped for want of room, as a man's would be if he tried to fight in a barrel. "The wolves are a free people," said Father Wolf. "They take orders from the head of the pack, and not from any stripped cattle killer. The man's cub is ours, to kill if we choose." "Ye choose and ye do not choose. What talk is this choosing? By the bull that I killed, am I to stand nosing into your dog's den for my fair dues? It is I, Shere Khan, who speak." The tiger's roar filled the cave with thunder. Mother Wolf shook herself clear of the cubs and sprang forward, her eyes like two green moons in the darkness, facing the blazing eyes of Shere Khan. "And it is I, Raksha, the demon, who answers. The man's cup is mine, Lungri, mine to me. He shall not be killed. He shall live to run with the pack. And to hunt with the pack. And in the end, look you, hunter of little naked cubs, frog-eater, fish-killer, he shall hunt thee. Now get hence, or by the Samhru that I killed, I eat no starved cattle. Peck thou, goes to thy mother, burnt beast of the jungle. Lamer than ever thou camest into the world, go." Father Wolf looked on amazed. He had almost forgotten the days when he won Mother Wolf in fair fight from five other wolves, when she ran in the park and was not called the demon for compliment's sake. Shere Khan might have faced Father Wolf, but he could not stand up against Mother Wolf, for he knew that there he was, she had all the advantage of the ground, and would fight him to the death. So he backed out of the cave mouth growling, and when he was clear, he shouted, "Each dog barks in his own yard. We will see what the pack will say to this fostering of man cubs. The cub is mine, and to my teeth he will come in the end, O bush-tailed thief." Mother Wolf threw herself down, panting among the cubs, and Father Wolf said to her gravely, "Shere Khan speaks this much truth. The cub must be shown to the pack. Wilt thou still keep him, mother?" "Keep him," she gasped. "He came naked by night, alone and very hungry, yet he was not afraid. Look, he has pushed one of my babies to one side already. And that lame butcher would have killed him, and would have run off to the Wangunga, while the villagers here hunted through all our lairs in revenge. Keep him? Assuredly, I will keep him. Lie still, little frog." "Oh, thou Mowgli, for Mowgli the frog I will call thee. The time will come when thou wilt hunt Shere Khan as he has hunted thee." "But what will our pack say?" said Father Wolf. The law of the jungle lays down very clearly that any wolf may, when he marries, withdraw from the pack he belongs to. But as soon as his cubs are old enough to stand on their feet, he must bring them to the pack council, which is generally held once a month at full moon, in order that the other wolves may identify them. After that inspections, the cubs are free to run where they please, and until they have killed their first buck, no excuse is accepted if a grown wolf of the pack kills one of them. The punishment is death, where the murderer can be found. And if you think for a minute, you will see that this must be so. Father Wolf waited till his cubs could run a little, and then, on the night of the pack meeting, took them and Mowgli and Mother Wolf to the Council Rock, a hilltop covered with stones and boulders where 100 wolves could hide. Akela, the great grey lone wolf, who led all the pack by strength and cunning, lay out at full length on his rock, and below him sat 40 or more wolves of every size and color, from badger-colored veterans who could handle a buck alone to young black three-year-olds who thought they could. The lone wolf had led them for a year now. He had fallen twice into a wolf trap in his youth, and once he had been beaten and left for dead, so he knew the manners and customs of men. There was very little talking at the rock. The cubs tumbled over each other in the center of the circle, where their mothers and fathers sat, and now and again a senior wolf would go quietly up to a cub, look at him carefully, and return to his place on noiseless feet. Sometimes a mother would push her cub far out into the moonlight to be sure that he had not been overlooked. Akela from his rock would cry, "Ye know the law, ye know the law. Look well, O wolves, and the anxious mothers would take up the call. Look, look well, O wolves! At last, and Mother Wolf's neck bristles lifted as the time came, Father Wolf pushed Mowgli the Frog, as they called him, into the center, where he sat laughing and playing with some pebbles that glistened in the moonlight. Akela never raised his head from his paws, but went on with a monotonous cry, look well, a muffled roar came up from behind the rocks, the voice of Shere Khan crying, the cub is mine, give him to me. What have the free people to do with a man's cub? Akela never even twitched his ears. All he said was, look well, O wolves, what have the free people to do with the orders of any save the free people? Look well. There was a chorus of deep growls, and a young wolf in his fourth year flung back Shere Khan's questions to Akela. What have the free people to do with the man's cub? Now, the law of the jungle lays down that if there is any dispute as to the right of a cub to be accepted by the pack, he must be spoken for by at least two members of the pack who are not his father and mother. Who speaks for this cub? Said Akela. Among the free people, who speaks? There was no answer, and Mother Wolf got ready for what she knew would be her last night, if things came to fighting. Then, the only other creature who is allowed at the pack council, Baloo, the sleepy brown bear who teaches the wolf cubs the law of the jungle, old Baloo, who can come and go where he pleases because he eats only nuts and roots and honey, rose upon his hind quarters and grunted. The man's cub, he said. I speak for the man's cub. There is no harm in a man's cub. I have no gift of words, but I speak the truth. Let him run with the pack and be entered with the others. I myself will teach him. We need yet another, said Akela. Baloo has spoken, and he is our teacher for the young cubs. Who speaks besides Baloo? A black shadow dropped down into the circle. It was Bagheera, the black panther, inky black all over, but with the panther markings shown up in certain likes like the pattern of watered silk. Everybody knew Bagheera, and nobody cared to cross his path, for he was as cunning as Tabaki, as bold as the wild buffalo, and as reckless as the wounded elephant. But he had a voice as soft as wild honey dripping from a tree, and a skin softer than down. O Akela, and ye the free people, he purred, I have no right in your assembly. But the law of the jungle says that if there is a doubt, which is not a killing matter in regard to a new cub, the life of that cub may be bought at a price. And the law does not say who may or may not pay that price. Am I right? Good, good, said the young wolves, who are always hungry. Listen to Bagheera. The cub can be bought for a price. It is the law. Knowing that I have no right to speak here, I ask you leave. Speak then, cried 20 voices. To kill a naked cub is shame. Besides, he may make better sport for you when he is grown. Baloo has spoken in his behalf. Now to Baloo's word I will add one bull and a fat one, newly killed, not half a mile from here. If you will accept the man's cup according to the law, is it difficult? There was a claim of scores of voices saying, what matter? He will die in the winter rains. He will scorch in the sun. What harm can a naked frog do us? Let him run with the pack. Where is the bull, Bagheera? Let him be accepted. And then came Akela's deep bay, crying, look well, O wolves. Mowgli was still deeply interested in the pebbles, and he did not notice when the wolves came and looked on him one by one. At last they all went down the hill for the dead bull, and only Akela, Bagheera, Baloo and Mowgli's own wolves were left. Shere Khan roared still in the night, for he was very angry that Mowgli had not been handed over to him. "I roar well," said Bagheera under his whiskers, "for the time will come when this naked thing will make thee roar to another tune, or I know nothing of men." "It was well done," said Akela. "Men and their cubs are very wise. He may be a help in time." "Truly, a help in time of need, for none can hope to lead the pack forever," said Bagheera. Akela said nothing. He was thinking of the time that comes to every leader of every pack when his strength goes from him, and he gets feebler and feebler, till at last he is killed by the wolves, and a new leader comes up to be killed in his turn. "Take him away," he said to Father Wolf, "and train him as befits one of the free people." And that is how Mowgli was entered in the Siwani wolf pack for the price of a bull and on Baloo's good word. Now you must be content to skip 10 or 11 whole years, and only guess at all the wonderful life that Mowgli led among the wolves. Because if it were written out, it would fill ever so many books. He grew up with the cubs, though they, of course, were grown wolves almost before he was a child. And Father Wolf taught him his business, and the meaning of things in the jungle, till every rustle in the grass, every breath of the warm night air, every note of the owls above his head, every scratch of a bat's claws as it roosted for a while in a tree, and every splash of every little fish jumping in a pool, meant just as much to him as the work of his office means to a businessman. When he was not learning, he sat out in the sun and slept, and ate, and went to sleep again. When he felt dirty or hot, he swam in the forest pool. And when he wanted honey, Baloo told him that honey and nuts were just as pleasant to eat as raw meat, he climbed up for it, and then Bagheera showed him how to do. Bagheera would lie out on a branch and call, "Come along, little brother." And at first Mowgli would cling like the sloth, but afterward he would fling himself through the branches almost as boldly as they grey ape. He took his place at the council rock, too, when the pack met, and there he discovered that if he stared hard at any wolf, the wolf would be forced to drop his eyes, and so he used to stare for fun. At other times he would pick the long thorns out of the paths of his friends, for wolves suffered terribly from thorns and burrs in their coats. He would go down the hillside into the cultivated lands by night and look very curiously at the villages in their huts. But he had a mistrust of a man because Bagheera showed him a square box with a drop gate so cunningly hidden in the jungle that he nearly walked into it and told him that it was a trap. He loved better than anything else to go with Bagheera into the dark warm heart of the forest, to sleep all through the drowsy day and at night see how Bagheera did his killing. Bagheera killed right and left as he felt hungry, and so did Mowgli, with one exception. As soon as he was old enough to understand things, Bagheera told him that he must never touch cattle, because he had been bought into the pack at the price of a bull's life. "All the jungle is thine," said Bagheera, "and thou canst kill everything that thou art strong enough to kill. But for the sake of the bull that bought thee, thou must never kill or eat any cattle, young or old. That is the law of the jungle." Mowgli obeyed faithfully. And he grew and grew strong as a boy must grow, who does not know that he is learning any lessons, and who has nothing in the world to think of except things to eat. Mother Wolf told him once or twice that Shere Khan was not a creature to be trusted, and that some day he must kill Shere Khan. But though a young wolf would have remembered that advice every hour, Mowgli forgot it because he was only a boy. Though
he would have called himself a wolf if he had been able to speak in any human tongue. Shere Khan was always crossing his path in the jungle. For as Akela grew older and feebler, the lame tiger had come to be great friends with the younger wolves of the pack, who followed him for scraps, a thing Akela would never have allowed if he had dared to push his authority to the proper bounds. Then Shere Khan would flatter them and wonder that such fine young hunters were content to be led by a dying wolf and a man's cub. "They tell me," Shere Khan would say, "that at a council ye dare not look him between the eyes." And the young wolves would growl and bristle. Bagheera, who had eyes and ears everywhere, knew something of this, and once or twice he told Mowgli, in so many words, that Shere Khan would kill him some day. Mowgli would laugh and answer, "I have the pack, and I have thee, and Baloo, though he is so lazy, might strike a blow or two for my sake. Why should I be afraid?" It was one very warm day that a new notion came to Bagheera, born on something that he had heard. Perhaps Ikki the porcupine had told him, but he said to Mowgli when they were deep in the jungle, as the boy lay with his head on Bagheera's beautiful black skin, "Little brother, how often have I told thee that Shere Khan is thy enemy?" "As many times as there are nuts on the palm," said Mowgli, who naturally could not count. "What of it? I am sleepy, Bagheera, and Shere Khan is a long tail and loud talk, like Mao the peacock." "But this is no time for sleeping. Baloo knows it, I know it, the pack knows it, and even the foolish, foolish deer know. Tabaki has told thee too." "Ho, ho," said Mowgli. "Tabaki came to me not long ago with some rude talk, that I was a naked man's cub and not fit to dig big nuts. But I caught Tabaki by the tail and swung him twice against a palm tree to teach him better manners." "That was foolishness, for though Tabaki is a mischief maker, he would have told thee of something that concerns thee closely. Open those eyes, little brother. Shere Khan dare not kill thee in the jungle, but remember, Akela is very old, and soon the day comes when he cannot kill his buck, and then he will be leader no more. Many of the wolves that looked thee over when thou wast brought to the council first are old too, and the young wolves believe, as Shere Khan has taught them, that a man cub has no place with the buck. In a little time thou will be a man." "And what is a man, that he should not run with his brothers?" said Mowgli. "I was born in the jungle, I have obeyed the law of the jungle, and there is no wolf of ours from whose paws I have not pulled a thorn. Surely they are my brothers." Bagheera stretched himself at full length and half shut his eyes. "Little brother," said he, "feel under my jaw." Mowgli put up his strong brown head, and just under Bagheera's silky chin, where the giant rolling muscles were all hid by the glossy hair, he came upon a little bald spot. "There is no one in the jungle that knows that I, Bagheera, carry that mark, the mark of the collar. And yet, little brother, I was born among men, and it was among men that my mother died, in the cages of the king's palace in Udaipur. It was because of this that I paid the price for thee at the council when thou wast a little naked cub. Yes, I too was born among men. I had never seen the jungle. They fed me behind bars from an iron pan till one night I felt that I was Bagheera, the panther, and no man's plaything, and I broke the silly lock with one blow of my paw and came away. And because I had learned the ways of men, I became more terrible in the jungle than Shere Khan. Is it not so?" "Yes," said Mowgli. "All the jungle fear Bagheera, all except Mowgli." "Oh, thou art a man's cub,
said the Black Panther very tenderly. And even as I return to my jungle, so thou must go back to men at last, to the men who are thy brothers, if thou art not killed in the council. But why should anyone wish to kill me? Said Mowgli. Look at me, said Bagheera, and Mowgli looked at him steadily between the eyes. The big panther turned his head away in half a minute. That is why, he said, shifting his paw on the leaves. Not even I can look thee between the eyes. And I was born among men, and I love thee, little brother. The others, they hate thee, because their eyes cannot meet thine, because thou art wise, because thou hast pulled out thorns from their feet, because thou art a man. I did not know this thing, said Mowgli sullenly, and he frowned under his heavy black eyebrows. What is the law of the jungle? Strike first, and then give tongue. By thy very carelessness, they know that thou art a man. But be wise. It is in my heart that when a killer misses his next kill, and at each hunt it costs him more to pin the pack will turn against him and against thee. They will hold a jungle council in the rock, and then? And then, I have it, said Bagheera, leaping up. Go thou down quickly to the men's huts in the valley, and take some of the red flower which they grow there, so that, when the time comes, thou mayest have even a stronger friend than I or Baloo of those of the pack that love thee. Get the red flower. By red flower, Bagheera meant fire. Only no creature in the jungle will call fire by its proper name. Every beast lives in deadly fear of it, and invents a hundred ways to describe it. The red flower, said Mowgli, that grows outside their huts in the twilight. I will get some. There speaks the man's cub, said Bagheera proudly. Remember that it grows in little pots. Get one swiftly, and keep it by thee for time of need. Good, said Mowgli, I go. But art thou sure, O my Bagheera? He slipped his arm around the splendid neck, and looked deep into the big eyes. Art thou sure that all this is Shere Khan's doing? By the broken log that freed me, I am sure, little brother. Then, by the bull that bought me, I will pay Shere Khan full tale for this, and it may be a little over, said Mowgli, and he bounded away. That is a man, that is all a man, said Bagheera to himself, lying down again. Oh, Shere Khan never was a blacker hunting than that frog hunt of thine 10 years ago.